Major Austin, Reel 3. Major, did you have any experience of actually putting these ideas into practice in battle?
Well, unfortunately, not at the beginning of the war, because in the BEF, the first time we really went into action was at the Battle of Arras on the 21st of May 1940, when we were due to go in with the 50th Infantry Division. But unfortunately, through no fault of their own, they didn't get to the start line until about an hour late, by which time we had been told that we must do this attack without infantry support. So we went in, and it wasn't really, we didn't cooperate with the infantry at all.
Was there any other occasions at all when you've had experience of working with infantry in a battle situation?
No, in France we had none whatsoever. We were, because after the Battle of Arras, there were the two tank battalions there, the 4th and the 7th. And at the end of that day, we were amalgamated into a composite squadron, which was called the 4th, 7th. And that was all the tanks that were left out of the two battalions. And again, we only did two or three more little skirmishes before we got back to Dunkirk.
When you were with the 2nd, there were various changes in equipment took place. How did you first of all get on with the medium tanks? Were there any major mechanical problems that you had at that time?
No, on the whole they were fairly reliable, and they were fairly simple, although cumbersome. Parts, if they did break, could be replaced fairly readily. And then, of course, in due course, we got the Mark I I-tank, the Matilda. And that started coming in, I suppose, in 1938. And we got those fairly rapidly on the whole, because we were the only I-tank battalion. So as tanks came off the production line, there was only the one unit for them to go to. So we did get equipped fairly rapidly with these. They, of course, were only a two-man tank, just the commander and the driver. And so the commander was a fairly busy chap, because not only did he have to direct his own driver, but he had to keep control of his troop. He had the map readings to do. He had the wireless to contend with. And, of course, the gunnery. And he had to be his own gunner. So one really was kept pretty busy.
What was your reaction to this infantry tank when it came out? Were you pleased about it?
Well, of course, it looked so small, and it was small, and, of course, it was terribly slow. It was only at about 5 miles an hour, and we, of course, were used to getting around at sort of 12, 15 miles an hour, and so from that point of view, it was somewhat of a disappointment. On the other hand, one had great confidence in it because it had really good thick armour on it, as opposed to the medium tank, which probably wouldn't have kept out a 0.5 machine gun.
How, when they first came into the force, how were they distributed?
As far as I remember, each company got a sort of a section at a time. But I don't think it was very long before the whole battalion was made up with the I-tanks. Only a matter of 2 or 3 months, I think, before we got our complete number, which is in the region of 50.
When you first got them, what was the sort of major problems you had? You described that you had a lot to do. Were there any other sort of mechanical things that you had problems with?
Well, they weighed 11 tons, and they were, it had an ordinary Ford V8 engine, and as far as I remember, an ordinary Ford gearbox. And therefore, if one let the clutch in rather smartly when one was going down a hill, that tremendous weight could create havoc with the gearbox, and a lot of selector rods and so on used to go until the drivers became slightly more proficient. But then later on, I don't think we did have an awful lot of trouble with them once the drivers got used to them.
Did they improve the second Mark? You got it?
Well, the Mark One was essentially the same right way throughout, as far as I remember. But then the Mark Two, which was a four-man tank, came along, and the 7th Battalion, which had only just been reformed up in Catterick in 1938, by the time they came out to the BEF, they had got a certain number of Mark II tanks. But we in the 4th tanks were entirely Mark I, plus the few light tank for reconnaissance purposes.
What sort of armament did it have, that...
The Mark II had a coaxially mounted machine gun with the two-pounder. It was a two-pounder gun, which was the same as the infantry anti-tank gun.
But what about the Mark I that you had?
And the Mark I had purely one machine gun, and the section commander had a 0.5 Vickers, as opposed to the water-cooled 303s, which the other two tanks in the section had. The 303 was the most excellent machine gun and really gave comparatively little trouble. But the 0.5 was an absolute brute and gave endless trouble, had awful stoppages. And of course, being that much bigger and heavier, they used to really jam solid. And so in action, one had to take the feed block out, which I think the belt went through, and hand that lifted out and hand it down to one's driver and tell him to try and sort that out, while one put another feed block and another belt in so that one could continue to fire.
You experienced this problem, did you?
Yes, indeed, yes. And it did mean that one had belts of ammunition all over the place, because as soon as your driver had cleared one feed block and handed it back to you, you were almost certainly ready to give him another one to clean out.
Did you feel that you were undergunned at all? I mean, when you
first got them? Indeed, yes, because we ran into a certain number of German tanks, and of course the 0.5 machine gun really couldn't penetrate them, but they, on the other hand, with their 37mm guns, couldn't penetrate us. But they, of course, had infinitely more speed than we had, so they could sort of run circles round us. Although by that time, we were that much faster, because we went up into Belgium by train, and then when we got up there, the main retreat started back again, and by that time all the railway lines had been blown up, so we had to come back on our tracks. And if we'd come back at 4 miles an hour, we'd never have got out. So the governors were removed, which made the tanks go twice the speed, up to about 8 miles an hour. And one kept going night and day at that sort of speed. And if those wretched engines had been in an ordinary Ford motor car, they'd have been cruising along at about 70 miles an hour all day.
And they lasted okay?
But they did last it, yes. On the retreat from Belgium back into France, we were only allowed, if we had any form of breakdown, if to repair that tank was going to take more than 2 hours, we had to destroy the tank because we couldn't afford the time. And if a thing like a fan belt went, which cost about 3 and 6 pence, one had to destroy the tank, because to get the fan belt, get a new fan belt on, it meant removing the engine, believe it or not. And so if a fan belt went, the tank had to be destroyed.
This happened sometimes.
And that did happen.
In the battle situation, was it just being outgunned, or at least not having an effective gun, that you found the problem?
That was the main problem, yes. The other thing was that the track was completely exposed. There was no form of guard to it at all. And therefore it was very vulnerable. And if hit by any form of shell, the track was liable to be broken. And that was it.
Had you worked with the infantry tank before, with infantry, before going off to France?
Yes, indeed. Yes, for part of 1938, you see, we had the Mark I, and so we did do a certain amount with the infantry.
Would this be the same sort of thing you'd done before?
Same sort of thing as before, yes.
Now, except that you mentioned before that you had a bell.
This Mark I did have a bell on the back.
And they used this thing?
And they used it, yes.
What would that mean? They ran the bell and you'd have to come out and...
Yes, well, just open up the lid. And, of course, it was so low to the ground that if one opened up one's lid, one's head was the same height as the chap standing up beside you. So there was no question of having to get out and climb down or anything. One could speak to him on level terms.
What about communications? Did they have they had a wireless?
Yes, they did. And as far as I remember, it was the number 22 set, which was rather more sophisticated than the things we'd had before. It was obviously much smaller because it was a very small tank and there was very little room in the turret. But one of the snags was the wireless was on the floor. There was no room in the actual turret itself. It was on the floor, so to tune it was the absolute devil. You had to almost stand on your head to get down there to get the tuning right.
Did you, when these tanks first arrived, did you have any contact, or were there any people from the manufacturers there?
Not that I remember. Now, I don't remember anybody coming and asking us, you know, our opinion as a sort of a user, as to any sort of modifications that we would like. I don't remember anybody coming.
Did you make any? Did you sort of tell your senior officers?
I don't think so. No, I think we accepted it as it was. And I think probably on the whole it was a very good compromise. It was small, it was a very tight fit, but it did have most things that one wanted in it.
How was it combined with the light tank?
Well, the light tank was really purely a reconnaissance vehicle and would do sort of over 30 miles an hour. And so that could dash off and find a harbour where you were going to lay up for the night. And also could be used as sort of liaison work, going back to infantry battalion headquarters and taking messages.
So that when you got this slower infantry tank, you didn't, the actual layout between light and infantry tanks stayed the same, did it?
It did indeed, yes.
And did you use that when you went to France?
Yes. The commanding officer was in a light tank, said he had more mobility and could get round to see the head of his battalion, which he'd never been able to do in a tank doing only 4 miles an hour. So the commanding officer was, you know, really rather vulnerable. And in fact, both the 4th and the 7th both lost their commanding officers that one day.
What was that, at the Battle of Arras, was it?
Yes.
You took part in that battle, didn't
you? Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Mm. What happened when you went in?
It was the first time that the Germans had ever really been given a bit of a bloody nose, because up till then they had just sort of swept majestically down through Belgium into France, and that was the first time that they really had been given any sort of form of rebuff at all.
How was the infantry tank used against them?
Well, it was used purely in sort of the mobile role, to the extent that the infantry weren't with us. So we were entirely on our own.
And you just had to stick it
yes,
there and
try and sort of break through the German lines.
Was this successful?
Yes, partially. It was successful to the extent that it gave the Germans a lot of food for thought, and may almost have been the reason why they didn't follow up with their armour into Dunkirk later on, and gave the BEF a chance to evacuate.
During the pre-war period, you went to Woolwich,
38. Yes.
Why did you do that?
Well, now, after one had been with one's field unit for about a year, all the young officers went off to the mechanical... what's the name of the place? College of Science, Military College of Science, which was in Woolwich. And one did 6 months there, entirely with civilian professors, learning about metallurgy and a certain amount of practical work, such as welding, brazing, soldering, and machine work. And, let's say, practical work and a lot of theory.
Did everybody have to do that?
Yes, we all did that.
How did you get on with it?
It was very, very interesting. Practical value, I think, is possibly somewhat doubtful. One did all sorts of weird and wonderful experiments, which I don't think were really of any practical use to us in the regiment. Much more use to us, I think, nowadays, playing on our own motor cars.
When you got back to the regiment, you said it wasn't of any practical use then. Did you, in fact, use it at all in any way?
I don't think I did, no. It really was, I think, what you might call a course of further education.
In 39, during that period, was there any sort of signs that you were getting prepared for war within the
regiment? Yes, indeed. In fact, in 38, we had a partial mobilization.
And in 39, what happened? Did you?
In 39, of course, we mobilized, it must have been the end of August we started mobilization, and before war was declared.
And how were you organized to sort of get going?
Well, by that time we were fully up to strength with our tanks, with the Mark 1. And so we were, we needed no sort of further equipment on mobilization. We had everything we needed.
And did you do, when you went off to France, when you got there, did you do exercises over there?
Yes, indeed. But of course, it was a very, very bitter winter. And it was, you know, the Fainé War for so long. But we did do a certain amount of training. And just before the Fainé War came to an end, we were at a large training area just outside Paris. We went down there.
Did you work with the French at all?
No.
French Army?
No.
When you went to the Western Desert with the infantry tanks, how did you cope with the desert?
Well, by that time, we had no Mark 1s. They had all been left in France or were certainly not issued to field formations. So we went out with the Mark 2, which, of course, was a very good tank indeed, and very good in the desert. It had a good wide track plate, it had a relatively low ground pressure, and so could move with the utmost ease over the sand.
What was your experience in the desert? You had a major problem eventually, didn't you?
The major problem, I think, was barbed wire, because just outside the Fort Capuzzo, there was the frontier wire between sort of the Italian part of the desert and the Egyptian part of the desert, and there was a massive barbed wire there around about 8 foot high, and although gaps had been cut in it, one invariably picked up a piece of barbed wire when one went through, and that then got wound round and round the sprocket. And the tracks on the Mark II were well and truly protected, as opposed to the Mark I, where there was no protection. And so trying to get in with a pair of wire cutters to clear wire that one got wrapped round really was a fearsome task.
Were you in tanks when you were in fact captured?
Yes, I was. Yes.
What had happened on this occasion?
This was at Fort Capuzzo. We had had a battle there in May 41, and all had gone well. And then in June 41, we tried to do the same thing again, by which time the Germans had got a number of 88mm guns, and they proved just too much for us. And we lost quite a number of tanks that day.
And it was the outgunning thing, was it?
Yes, actually yes. It? Yes, you see, we only had a two-pounder, and they had these 88mm, which was an AK-AK gun, but mounted in the ground position as an anti-tank gun, and of course they were very formidable.
Were there many tank corps people taken the day that you were captured?
Not very many taken, but quite a large number killed.
And who in fact captured you? Was it the Italians?
The Germans. Germans came out. The tank was set on fire. You had to bail out. And the Germans came up and picked us up.
How long were you a prisoner of war?
I did 4 years altogether. From Italy, I went to hospital in Benghazi, where I was for about a month, and then across to Italy. And then when the Italian armistice came along, we all managed to get out of the camp I was in. I was on the loose for 2 or 3 months, and then picked up again and taken off to Germany, where I stayed till the end of the war.
When you were on the loose, did you sort of hide up with some Italians?
Yes, with Italian farmers.
And they were helpful to you?
Oh, very helpful indeed.
Mm. How did you sort of meet up with them later on after the war?
Yes, later on when I was stationed in Italy, and just before I came back to the Staff College, I loaded up my jeep with petrol and food, and went off and visited all these farmers, and I must say they were delighted, and so was I, to meet them again. They really had been terribly kind.
They had lent you money, hadn't they?
They lent a lot of money in order to, when I got in touch with an escape system, and so I borrowed a lot of money from them on the understanding that it would be paid back at the current rate after the war. And when I went back, I found that they had actually been paid back, and so they were more than happy.
That's fine. Right. Thank you. That's fine.